Welcome to the Faith Element podcast for the May 9, 2021 session, focusing on 1 John chapter 5, verses 1 through 6, Released to Love. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm David Adams.
And I'm Crystal Shepherd.
Well, usually I have a lead-in question for the group here that helps us loosen up and get to know each other a little better. Not that we really need a lot of help with that anymore, but hey, sometimes you discover things, right?
True. Mm-hmm.
But today, I want to take just a moment to talk to you about Faith Element resources for worship. Now, you're listening to this podcast, you've heard the name Faith Element, and a lot of our listeners come to us because of our Bible study curriculum. But you may not know that we also have a set of worship resources on the same website at faithelement.net. But if you go faithelement.net/worship, you can go and learn about these resources, and you can even see samples of them there. And it's because these are really for worship planners. So whether you're a minister, a worship leader, minister of music, those involved in worship planning, it's a very resource-intensive task. Selecting hymns, selecting anthems, selecting responsive readings or litanies, developing appropriate prayers. And if your church follows the Revised Common Lectionary, the good news is we're developing every single week a set of really high-quality resources for you and linking off to a wide variety of things that are available out there. So it's really a curated collection for worship leaders. And the idea is save time, but also have really high-quality options for worship planners to use. So I hope you will give it a look, that you'll go visit faithelement.net/worship, actually, and take a look at the information there. And if you'll scroll down to the bottom of that page, you'll see there's several samples, so you can get a feel for what you would get each week. The best of it, best news about it, is it's only $3.99 a month. So it's super affordable. So I hope you'll take a look at it, or let your worship leaders know about it, because it'll help save them time. Well, we have been in the book of 1 John for several sessions now, and we have another one, and this time, Crystal, would you help us get started with it?
Sure. I recently watched an episode of Station 19, the Shonda Rhimes spinoff of Grey's Anatomy, set in a firehouse in Seattle. In this episode, Victoria, a young black woman, said this in response to the murder of George Floyd. "You know what gets me is the people trying to humanize him. You're trying to humanize a person. Do you really have to look for proof that we're people too? Really? We should care more about him because he was a good father or a loving brother or a high school athlete or fun at a party? No. We should care about him because he was a person. George Floyd shouldn't be treated this way because he was a person. A cop should not have had his knee on his neck until the last gasp of life was choked out of him because he is a person." At the time of this recording, we are days past the verdict being read in the murder case of George Floyd. During the trial, more black and brown brothers and sisters were killed at the hands of law enforcement. Dante Wright and Micaiah Bryant both shot. Video was released of the police shooting of 13-year-old Adam Toledo. As a white woman of privilege, I have been simultaneously angry and paralyzed. I just can't understand the brutality and dehumanization of another person. I struggle, but I think part of it is that we not only fail to see the humanity in others, but also the image of God reflected in them as well. Ultimately, I'm of the opinion that the hatred and disregard of another can be boiled down to a lack of love, which is something that today's scripture addresses. Much like the church today, the community addressed in 1 John was experiencing a crisis of faith. Many had stopped believing that Jesus was the Messiah, and others were confused about what to believe. Judith Jones, vicar at St. Stephen and St. Luke by the Sea Episcopal Churches in Oregon, says that John's simple response is relevant to us today. The letter states basically that you know who you are, You know whose you are, and you know what you have been told from the beginning. God's own spirit shows us what is true. There is no need to panic or argue. Focus on living your faith instead. How is this laid out by John? By not only legitimizing Jesus as both Son of God and human, but by tying belief in Jesus to faith lived by love and keeping the commandments of God. There's a lot of talk here of water, blood, and the Spirit. Though there is speculation about what is meant here, water seems to be tied to the baptism of Jesus, where he is identified as the Son of God, with the Spirit descending upon him. The blood is often seen as Jesus' blood that he willingly allowed to be shed when he was crucified. Some believe it is a reminder of Jesus' conversation with Nicodemus about being born again. Still others see the water and blood as pointing to Jesus' humanity, because he was born from a human mother, which would have involved the breaking of water and the shedding of blood. Whatever John's intention, we get a clear picture that Jesus is both human and the Son of God. The important part here is how this belief is tied to faith. Everyone who believes in Jesus has been born of God. John further states that everyone who loves the parent loves the child. So by inference, every person who loves God should love those who are children, meaning not just Jesus, but all believers, all people. How do we show this love? We keep God's commandments. Yes, this is hearkening back to the commandment to love your neighbor as yourself. Love cannot be separated from action. The good old Brodmann commentary says, a person may not feel right toward a neighbor, a Christian brother, or an enemy, and yet love them with agape by treating them as a person and doing right by them. How does this apply today? Judith Jones says, every child of God is linked to Jesus. Every injustice done to a child of God echoes the injustice done to him. Every act of violence committed against a child of God recalls the violence committed against Jesus. So when we see George Floyd being crushed under the knee of Derek Chauvin, we see Jesus. When we see Adam Toledo raise his hands and get shot, we see Jesus. When we hear the death of another Black trans woman, we hear of the death of Jesus. And it is a call, not just to love, but to act. For our thoughts and our prayers to have feet and to shake the foundations of oppression. 1 John is saying that loving God, loving God's children, and keeping God's commandments are all linked together. The commandments are not heavy like the weights of the law. Jesus said, "My yoke is easy and my burden is light." The true simplicity of God's commandments is that they are a constant call to love, not just in words, but in actions. Our faith in God is bound to acting in love. So we must stand up and denounce white supremacy, police violence against people of color, the denigration of women, and the mistreatment and murder of our LGBTQ+ siblings. More than that, we must truly act to change the systems that keep this happening, the systems that we have helped to create, as well as the ones from which we benefit. The church and its people have the opportunity to walk in the way of the Savior they proclaim by being active agents of change and using the power of privilege to help flatten the high places and make level, straight paths for all of God's children. In this way, we truly love our siblings and our God.
I think if you read John long enough, at least I know for me, I'm reminded of this famous saying that people say about Martin Luther. When they ask him, why do you preach the same sermon every week? He says, well, you know, when you get the message, I can go to something else, essentially. John is saying the same thing over and over and over again. Interestingly, when we had this in seminary, this was something in our Greek exegesis class, we had to translate the book. And we translated it because John wrote in a very simple Greek, and he used words and phrases and things that would appeal to children. And so he's writing the whole time calling people his children, his little children, things like this. But here it is at the end of the book, and John's still saying children. He's still saying, you're still children. Understand, we're all children together. And that's what it means to be a follower. That's what it means to trust in Christ, is to understand that we are all children together, and we all deserve to be treated as such. And I love the line that this begins with, you know, that everybody who believes that Jesus is the Christ has been born of God, and everyone who loves the parent loves the child. So he puts it right out there for the umpteenth time in this book. But it's a message we just keep needing to hear over and over again, because we just don't get it.
Crystal, as I was listening to your intro, besides just dealing with the emotion that it evokes, I found myself thinking about our modern sensibilities that lead us to separation rather than connection. That I was trying to think of a good example. So like there, you know, there's a flower blooming outside my window here, and I can see that as a separate thing, right? I can see that as a flower, the stem, the leaves, the bloom, or I can see it as parts, right? The petals, the leaves, the stem, the roots. I could even go further and really see that flower as part of a flower bed, as part of a, you know, as part of the earth, as part of life outside my window. Because is there really a meaningful gap between the soil and the roots that feed the plant and the water that brings the nutrients? And do you see what I'm trying to say? I think it's often really hard for us, our Western minds, to stop separating everything into little parts. And there's damage done when we do that, because we can look at fellow children of God as a part, as separate, as a different bit of creation over there, as opposed to one of the family, one that is related to, one that is part of. Am I making any sense at all?
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Is there a better example? I don't
know. Well, when I hear you give that example, I think that part of the problem is that we hold ourselves apart from the rest of the flowers in the bed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't look at ourselves as part of the larger flower bed with other flowers of different colors and different smells and things around us. We don't look at it that way. We separate ourselves from that and don't have this sense of connectedness that we would have if we could do that. So it's very easy to, really where Crystal started was where a lot of this seems to come from. It's easy to not view people as children of God, to dehumanize them, to say just the fact that they are a human being matters, and they shouldn't have to go through these things. They shouldn't have to be begging for respect and shouldn't have to hope that someone would treat them well. You can only really do that once you've separated people out from you and said there's something other.
I think the metaphor can actually go a little further even. David, I love how you brought up that we like to see ourselves apart from the rest of the flower bed, right? That we want to see the way that we stand out. And what happens if we pick that flower out of that flower bed? Eventually that flower will die. And I think in a similar way, when we try to set ourselves apart from other humans and pretend like we are separate or different from, we disconnect ourselves from that community. And when we do it by dehumanizing other people, what happens is we end up losing our own humanity. Mm-hmm. And so like that humanness in us will die when we choose to dehumanize other people.
But there's something, and maybe it's cultural, I don't know, where people want to think of themselves as qualitatively better than others. And if you can start doing that, you get to the point where it's easy to judge someone as not as better as you are. And that's a bad road to start going down.
I think it's really hard for us to see that in ourselves too, to see that desire we have to put ourselves over other people. But I think it's in all of us.
Yeah, it's kind of the American dream, as they call it.
Right.
The idea of exceptionalism. That's what exceptionalism is.
That's right. That's right.
Well, and that's my kids and I are trying to have a broader view of history now. And so, you know, we're learning more and more of the stories of Indigenous peoples in America. And then we just got to the advent of slavery. Mm-hmm. And what I did not know, when you talk about exceptionalism and what was not taught to me in school in history, was that English, Dutch, different groups came over to America, and I'll spare you a huge long history lesson, but what I didn't know was that the English first tried to kind of colonize the Irish. Like, they demonized the Irish, and they actually called them savages. And then veterans of that war were settlers that came over and fought against the Indigenous people in America. And so it's like, in that same pattern was stamped on there. And it was this idea of they are less than, they are less than. And then you bring over the first slaves in 1619 to American soil, and they are less than. And I think it's just, when we talk about American exceptionalism, there's a lot of reasons why we have it, but I think it's actually, like, the more I'm reading and the more I'm learning, it's just baked right into it's in our soil, it's in our beginnings. Mm. And that is so hard for me, because I feel like the line runs straight down to what we are seeing today.
Well, and we're socialized still for that, right? I mean, mm-hmm. our children are placed in educational settings, which often have a competitiveness that's just baked right in. So, I mean, the minute you start relating to other people, there's a competitiveness factor that's going on. Who's getting the best grades? Who's the most well-behaved? Who gets the scholarships? Who? And it's just part of our system. I was drawn to this quote that, Nikki, I think you had in your intro, that where you said, the call to love others is a call to not let judgment and competition be our first response to one another. And I really, mm-hmm. I mean, I kept reading that over, because I was thinking, that's so true. How often do I, you know, meet someone and that's my first act, is to either judge them based on what they look like or how they're acting or how they're not like me.
Yeah.
and then maybe even competitive, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do I measure up with them, or them with me, or my group, or whatever? And it's so built in. But I guess the alternative that First John is calling us to consider is that our first response to another be to realize they are children of God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that the fact that John is talking about this is also a great indicator that this particular tendency, and you can call it sin if you want to, I'm comfortable, very comfortable calling it that, mm-hmm. is baked into the Bible as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus's earliest followers, they're fighting this the whole time.
Yes.
The whole idea of the mm-hmm. Judaizers fighting against the other folks. John's generation is now like the grandchildren of those people who'd been through that. And now mm-hmm. Gnosticism is arising, and they're still doing the same thing. This group thinks they're better than us. We're going to judge people differently. We're going to treat them differently. We will not fully allow people to be fully children of God, because we can't live in a world where we're not different.
And I think that's because, I think a part of that is because we're so uncomfortable with our own humanity. So I think that because the things that you two just said, it's all about, how do I measure up? It's judging myself against someone else instead of just trusting the human that God made in me to be me the way that I am. I'm not this. I mean, sometimes Crystal and I think we are twins, but we are not exactly the same. Like, there are differences between Crystal and I. And I have
small differences.
They're very small. Yes, yes, yes. But when I can learn to trust this human in me that God made, that I don't have to measure myself against other people, I can trust that what God made in me is enough. And it is whole. It can be whole in this world. I think we said this could be, you know, about American exceptionalism. And absolutely, we have to look at that. But I also just think this is human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just think it's a part of what it means to be human.
And I think it connects too to kind of this myth of scarcity and thinking that there's not enough to go around. Yes. And yes. So I think this idea of like, you know, Nikki, when you were talking about just being being okay with who God created me to be, I think if each of us could do that, we would realize that we are so deeply loved by God, and there's enough love from God to go around. So just because God loves this person does not mean that God hates this person. Mm-hmm. And I just even had that conversation with my son, like when I was trying to write the introduction for the podcast, and he wanted to spend 30 minutes talking to me about, well, if God created people to be a certain way, then why would God want them to be tormented in hell? And it's like, huh, okay, here we go. We got to answer this question, you know? And I talked to him and I said, well, what do you think? And he started talking about God's love for people. Mm-hmm. And folks, there is enough of that to go around. It is not a scarcity. And I just wish people, you know, God can love a straight white guy, and God can love a black trans woman, and God can love, and God can love, and God can love. And there's enough. There's enough.
What about Florida Gator fans?
I think that is, yeah, God can love them too.
Are the Yankees fans too?
But maybe just God. There was that song, Jesus and Mama Only Loved Me.
There we go. I'm just going to say, I just think that if we can trust what Nikki said, that we are made just the way, we don't have to compare ourselves, and we can just accept that love, then I think that would free us to love others.
Well, and I also think it's building on this, how we see ourselves and how that leads to either separation from others or connection with others. You know, you can ask two people the same question. You can say, hey, tell me about yourself. And one person may tell you about themselves from a perspective of separation. These are the things that, so I could say, you know, I'm not a fan of the Florida Gators. Sorry, people, I'm not really against the Florida Gators, so don't.
It's okay. You
don't
are.
Send us mail.
That's perfectly fine.
But I mean, I could sit here and say, this is what I do for a living. This is the kind of car I drive. This is my hobby. This is how I like to spend my time, blah, 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 blah. Those are things that differentiate me, that show that I'm unique. You ask somebody the same question, they might say things that connect them. I am the husband of, I am the father to, I am a member of. And those kinds of seeing yourself in terms of how we're connected to one another makes a difference, I think, in how we see others and relate to them. Yeah. We're just so prone to separation and distance. Mm-hmm. And Zoom doesn't help any. I'm sorry.
It doesn't. At all. I'm so over it.
I see, Crystal just brought back a memory I had because I know it's weird, but I listened to all of these podcasts in the original uncut versions, by the way. So going back over a year and a half ago, I was listening to one of these, and there's this guy, Daniel somebody or the other, who was on here. But he had this interesting conversation where he was talking about the fact that we sometimes work from this idea of scarcity. As Chris was just talking about, scarcity is so ingrained in us that it even comes into our concept of grace. Mm-hmm. And he was determined to become somebody who wanted to work from a position of hyperabundance of grace, and to treat people as if grace was hyperabundant, and to talk about being generous with grace and being somebody who, for lack of a better word, throws it around like crazy, like somebody who would waste a lot of money or something. I forgot the exact terms he used, but he was going to be just pouring grace on everybody he saw. That's the goal. And I liked it so much, I stole it and preached it in the sermon that next Sunday. But it was just the perfect thing to say. We are so caught up in scarcity, you know, that, oh, if we allow this person to have love, do we have any left for ourselves? You know, if we allow them to be human beings, well, what does that say about us? Can we be human too? Because we're not like them. You know, we're so concerned about scarcity, and it's so hard to get past it that it just shapes all of our dialogues like this. And we just can't understand that God can give us so much.
And I think that carries over into not just love and grace, but like the whole thing in 1 John is that how is this lived out? And so if we carry that into, there's enough medical care to go around. Oh my goodness. There is enough food to go around. There is enough of all these things so that if we share with someone else, that doesn't mean that we're not going to have. So I think it goes from, if you're living that love and that grace and as if that is abundant, then I would expect to see it carry over and to be lived out.
Yes, but we are so afraid of the scarcity that even now, one of the dominant things that we're arguing against and fighting with in our society are those people who are afraid of having their place taken by someone else. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, we're going to be replaced. We won't have the status we used to have. We won't have all those things because someone else has it. And that turns people into a threat that they really aren't, but it makes an imaginary threat out of other people. And it dehumanizes people.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are at an interesting time in our culture. I guess all times are interesting times, depending on who you are. But it seems particularly present in front of us daily how separated and polarized our culture is, how one person is turned against another or scared of another or feels or is held back by another. It's so easy for any of these conversations to turn into political chatter or the ideological kinds of conversations. But I think the gift of what we've been looking at here in 1 John is the simplicity of this call to set all that aside and to just go with this almost childlike understanding that we are all children of God. And if we don't do anything else, can we just work on loving each other? And it may be that that kind of simplicity is what will lead us out of this. And certainly, you know, there's all these conversations about, well, what's the church going to look like after the pandemic? How are ministries going to be shaped? What are we going to do? And, you know, it's going to be different. It is, and probably should be. But maybe part of the clue is not to get more complex, but to get more simple on the focus of this very simple call to love God and to love one another. It's hard to do, but well worth it. I look forward to more conversations like this. And wherever you are out there listening to the podcast, I hope you find wonderful ways to connect with the people around you rather than separate. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
And you.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.